Welcome to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we seek out the truth wherever it leads us, giving you the stories that you probably won't see in the mainstream media. And boy, do we have a ton of stories that you're not going to see in the mainstream media, because you really have to seek them out hardcore in order to find them. And the mainstream media in the West continues to spin a narrative about what's been unfolding with the Nord Stream pipeline and the war in Ukraine. We're going to unpack that in tonight's show. So we are going to look at the very latest new revelations on the Nord Stream pipeline sabotage. We are going to talk about the referenda, of course, that are about to be voted on in, or actually be signed into law. So what does that mean for the war in Ukraine? We are literally 24 hours away from a game-changing moment in world history.
And what does that mean for the rest of us, right? The lives we know it will change. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about what this means for Serbia. We've been following this story. Serbia continues to be threatened. And we're going to talk about the dance that they are being forced to do for trying to be peaceful and neutral.
Millions of people without power in Florida and the Caribbean and Cuba as Hurricane Ian continues to batter up the coast, heading towards the east coast of the United States right now. But of course, there's politics around this, involves climate change. And it didn't take long for members of the left, Democrats, to come out and try to use this as a fundraising opportunity. So we're going to talk about the politics around climate change, the politics around hurricanes and these severe weather events on the show tonight.
Plus, could you be forced to open up your business or your home to combat homelessness? There is a new law in Los Angeles that is forcing business owners to do just that. Now, we've been primed for this by the pandemic, that the government can just shut down your business or tell you exactly what to do with said business. Is this sort of the next natural step? And then will we have to, open up our own homes, right? Because of this new practice of taking with eminent domain. We are going to ask some hard questions in that story about the word now is unhoused, not homeless. We're going to talk about the nomenclature as well.
All right. With all of that being said, Redacted starts right now. Thursday edition of Redacted. Thank you so much for joining us. Somebody last night said, hey, you know, watching mainstream media, it's amazing how few people are watching mainstream media because they're watching, many people watching Redacted. So thank you so much to all of our rebels joining us, watching us here, because we had literally crushing the ratings of CNN last night. The amount of people that watched our channel last night compared with mainstream media, which is run by billionaires, is astonishing. So they've got to be cowering in their boots, because I don't know anybody that's getting a new cable subscription.
Maybe they are, or they just feel like if we keep doing what we're doing, we'll get our old audience back. Who knows? But there's plenty of stories today that necessitate nuance, right? Which is what we are willing to do, that you are not allowed to do on mainstream media. Clayton and I know this because we were mainstream media news anchors. And, you know, we had to really dumb it down and just kind of stick to a narrative. We refuse to do that here on the show. So thank you for joining us. Remember to please join our community over at redacted.inc. You can join our community and you can join the newsletter. The newsletter is totally free. It comes to your inbox every morning during the week. And it is brought to you by these guys, this guy and this guy, right?
That's right. So you put in your email address. When you go to redacted.inc, just put in your email address and sign up. You'll get a welcome email from us. Yeah, you click there, you put in your email address. Again, it's not .com, it's .inc. And then you'll receive this inbox into your inbox first thing in the morning, where we cover five or six big stories of the day. Today, we covered in part the latest developments on the Nord Stream pipeline. We also talked about a number of different stories as it relates to the hurricane. So again, click on it. You'll receive it in your inbox. You can read it over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning. So we had thousands of people sign up last night. So our thanks to you for becoming a part of our community. Tonight, we are on a time crunch, so we're not going to be able, you can get in your super chats. We're not going to be able to read your super chats tonight live on the show, but we certainly appreciate that comment. And I always want to ask here live at the top of the show, Like we just said, if you subscribe, your name will pop right up here on the screen. So thank you,
Tanner True,
for just subscribing to the channel. If you subscribe, your name will pop up here. And I always love to know in the chat, let us know right now, where are you joining us from? Who is the furthest away? Do we have anybody watching us from Antarctica tonight? That's Antarctica actually might come up in the show today. Do we have anyone from, let's see, can you name another faraway location?
Chile.
Chile? Okay, Chile. Okay.
Buenos Aires.
Yeah. Let us know where you're joining us from. Drop it in the comments. Drop it in the comments below.
All right.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
I'm full of piss and vinegar about today's show, you guys. That's what my grandma used to say.
Yeah.
As an expression. I'm full of piss and vinegar. So let's do it.
Well, let's get to it because NATO just officially a short time ago admitted, and it finally came out and admitted that the Nord Stream pipelines were sabotaged. Hello. Like, we didn't know this, but we now have NATO officially declaring that they were, in fact, sabotaged by a state actor. This is not some random guy on a moped or a little, like, a jet ski out there or a dolphin. No, this is state sabotage, a government responsible for this. Germany says it's on the edge of an energy abyss, so get ready for blackouts across Europe. More on that in a minute. We'll cover more of that story in a minute because we have a lot of news to get to first on the major part of the Ukraine war. And an update this afternoon on that. So first on the referenda, tomorrow everything changes in Ukraine. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Moscow time, the Kremlin will host the signing ceremony, officially welcoming the four Donbas regions into the Russian Federation. They will officially become Russian. They will officially become part of Mother Russia. This is a major turning point in world history and an expansion, of course, of the Russian Federation. The New York Times, by the way, didn't waste any time missing a beat on this and continues to parrot the Biden administration's labeling of these referendums as shams. Take a look at your screen. Breaking news. Vladimir Putin will sign agreements on Friday to take over four Ukrainian regions, the Kremlin said, after votes widely denounced as a sham. A sham by who, by the way? The Western media? Like, who's saying these are shams?
I don't know. And I really don't like that word. It's not very strong. It's
well, they're parroting exactly what Antony Blinken said, the Secretary of State, right?
Yes.
Which is that these were sham referenda. And then immediately the Western media started parroting this word sham. It's appeared in all manner of Western media publications.
Yes.
Based on what? Based on what? You had no reporters there, New York Times. You had no journalists there covering this. The journalists who were there, like the Patrick Lancasters of the world, Eva Bartlett, Vanessa Bealey, Wyatt Reed, the list goes on, who were actually there watching this. No one had a gun put to their head to vote. In fact, the Russian Foreign Ministry says these elections were not shams. Not one person was forced to vote, and they voted to protect their families from 8 years of attacks by Ukraine. This was just a short time ago. Watch this.
Высокая явка проголосовавших и результаты волеизъявления их жителей говорят сами за себя. Люди не хотят возвращаться к прежней жизни. Они достаточно настрадались. Они выстрадали свое будущее. Они доказали, что они имеют право на мирную жизнь.
And the Russian people, according to polling, have wanted, actually, Vladimir Putin, surprisingly, most people don't know that he's a lawyer. Most people don't know that he's actually one of the more moderate people in his own government. Mm-hmm. And most people don't know, actually, that the Russian people have been pushing him to actually go further and harder and faster into Donbass.
Right. His parliament voted for military action long before he took it. He really took a long time to get around to it.
Right. And so now here we go. A major shift. And so, of course, what this means is 3 p.m. tomorrow, Moscow time, means that the military operation now shifts from a special military operation to an anti-terrorist operation, which is what we've been hearing, right? The full weight and power of the Russian army going up against anyone who attacks these regions.
Now, I just feel the need to remind everyone that it didn't have to be like this, because when these regions were occupied by Russia early in the conflict, they were happy to say these regions are independent. We'll support them, but Ukraine now leave them alone, right? And that was part of the peace deal that the West continues to ignore.
Right.
So this could have been over a long time ago if the West was willing to be humble in any shape or form.
No, of course they weren't. And right, and this is, again, why NATO NATO doesn't want this war to end at all. They want to fight till the last Ukrainian. They don't give a rat's ass. In fact, new reports and secret information came out about NATO's involvement. One former NATO advisor said that, no, NATO doesn't care at all about the Ukrainian people. They're using it as a staging ground, a proxy war, and they will fight to the last Ukrainian because they don't care about the Ukrainian people at all. That's why yesterday NATO held a secret meeting that was exposed by the New York Times. According to the New York Times, 40 NATO members met in secret to ramp up their war in Ukraine, not de-escalate the war. Their goal, of course, is to turn this into a forever war, which is what they want. Here's what the New York Times says. In a sign that the United States and its allies believe that the fighting in Ukraine will last years, military officials from more than 40 countries gathered in NATO's headquarters in Brussels on Wednesday to discuss how their governments can ramp up production of arms and ammunition. Because they don't clearly have enough arms and ammunition going into Ukraine. Can you believe this? I mean, they've been telling us this is what's going to happen for a long time.
Right. So then, yes, I said, no, I can't believe it, but yes, I can.
Yes, you can.
It's unbelievable, but believable, like the world we live in today.
Let us know in their chat if you can believe this. NATO is actually going to start sending more weapons to Ukraine. Can you believe this? Is it shocking? NATO is a...
I personally am shocked.
Philip's
Are
shocked.
You shocked?
I'm personally shocked.
You cannot believe it.
Scandalized.
This sounds fake. This
more,
is fake.
More weapons? Do we have more weapons?
You know.
There is always room for, what was the commercial? There's always room for Jell-O. There's always room for weapons.
There's always room for weapons. Last night, someone in our chat or in the comments after our live show said, and by the way, after tonight's live show, I will be in the comments section of the live show afterwards. So for about an hour. So after the show is off the air, join us in the comments section and we'll go back and forth and have a discussion. So feel free to do that.
But Clayton never comes to bed. Right. He just eats, lives, sleeps, geopolitics.
So last night, someone just wrote the words fake news in our comments. And I said, could you please be specific? And then another person chimed in and said, how refreshing. A channel is actually like when someone like engaging with someone who internet trolls who just post things like this. I said, yeah, if I'm being wrong, if anything that I'm saying here is inaccurate, what we're doing is we're reporting based on facts and evidence. So if there's anything that was actually faked and you have some evidence of that, please let me know. That person never responded, of course, because it's just easy to type those words and then walk away from your computer. But you should know that NATO is a weapon of U.S. hegemony. It's very easy to uncover that. It's not fake news at all. You can do your own research if you like. If you speak out against it, you will be locked up. You will be blacklisted. You will be pushed to the side, which is this unbelievable moment yesterday. I want you to watch this. When British Labour Party member Angelo Sanchez got up, because they're voting right now to send more money and weapons to Ukraine. And you're seeing this fracturing now in certain leaders in Europe saying, no, enough is enough. Our people are suffering. So he got up yesterday and told the truth about NATO aggression in Ukraine. He told the truth about Ukrainian censorship, about oppression of people, about it being one of the most corrupt countries in all of the world. Yesterday, he got up and said this. He told the truth about how corrupt Ukraine is. He was suspended from the Labour Party and kicked out of the conference when he said this. Watch.
What does supporting motion 13 on Ukraine mean? It means that the future Labour government will be sending money to a government, the Ukrainian government, that is repressing the left in their own country, a government that is criminalizing socialist parties and imprisoning Ukrainian activists. You will be supporting a government that has passed anti-workers laws, which completely strips Ukrainian workers of collective rights. If you support this motion, motion 13 on Ukraine, you are not supporting the Ukrainian people. You are supporting only the United States. You are supporting neoliberalism. You are supporting imperialism.
Delegate, this is a debate. You've got to listen.
Yeah, so they cut him off.
We don't want to hear that.
We don't
want
to hear that. Sorry, you can't say that. Isn't it amazing, though? He was calling out their BS. He was saying the Ukrainian government has been suppressing people, oppressing people, oppressing workers' rights, censoring speech. And they're like, yeah, this is a violation of workers' rights. Yeah, you're right, you're right. And he says, so if you support this motion to send more money to Ukraine, what you're doing is you're supporting the U.S. and NATO hegemony. And people are like, Boo.
Wait a second. I was on board until now.
Right at the end, she's like, hey, this is a debate, dude. You can't bring up points that you don't like. That's not how debate works.
Do not debate us with the alternate viewpoint.
So he's been suspended. I just wanted to bring that up. This is what we're seeing right now. And this is NATO hegemony at work. I mean, right inside the Labour Party, inside the United States government. So updates now on the pipeline situation. Swedish authorities noted a fourth explosion to the pipeline. And this is amazing. So we now know, and they have also confirmed, these are not earthquakes. I know the Western media is trying to say these are probably earthquakes. No, Swedish and Danish authorities, as we reported last night, have both said that's impossible. Seismologists have said that is impossible. These were not earthquakes. This was deliberate explosions set by a state actor. That is what happened. Sky News actually confirmed what we reported last night. We beat Sky News on this story from our intelligence sources that this was likely carried out by an underwater drone strike. Here's Sky News. Nord Stream was likely hit by remote controlled explosives. Mines could have been planted near the pipelines by a boat or underwater drone. And they're even saying months or even years ago and then controlled remotely. Swedish authorities have found an underwater drone that was there. They found it back in 2015 with explosives around it. They had to remove it from the pipe. It didn't go off. And conveniently, that drone was never identified what country of origin it came from.
They didn't bother.
Isn't that interesting?
Like, isn't there a lost and found for drones?
If you find my American drone, please return to
Wanted.
1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. Russia this morning is demanding answers and an investigation by the UN against the attack by the United States on this pipeline. They released this statement. Here's the Russian embassy. We note that the attempts by some U.S. legislators to put blame on Russia for the incidents that occurred on Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines, perhaps, they have a better view from the top of Capitol Hill. But if that's the case, they must also have seen the U.S. warships' activities at the very site of the Russian infrastructure disruption just the day before, or noticed drones and helicopters flying over there, or observed U.S. Navy exercises with underwater explosives that had been conducted in the same area some time ago. Finally, they should have recalled the promises made by President Biden to bring an end to the Nord Stream 2 project. Yes. So all of that is true. In fact, the Navy confirmed as much. Moon of Alabama pointed me to a June NATO report, which I'd forgot about. But actually, at the time, in Europe, I remember reporting on and reading about all of the NATO exercises that were unfolding in the Baltic Sea. There was 11 countries that were involved in these exercises, Portugal being one of them. We actually saw warships on their way to these exercises. So witnessed it with my own eyes, this happening. And it showed NATO has total control of this area in the Baltic Sea, according to this Navy report. This is from the Navy report itself, right from the Navy's website. This was the report. Baltops 22 was the Baltic maritime exercises. That was unfolding there, and they used naval forces, Europe Naval Striking and Support Forces, NATO, and the NATO Strike Force carrying out these military exercises. And what's interesting, I'll pull this up on my screen here, which is some of the things that they did was scientists from at sea, the ships fine-tuned tactical maneuvering, anti-submarine warfare, live fire training, mine countermeasures operations, and replenishments at sea. They also did, the scientists from five nations brought the latest advancements in underwater vehicle mine hunting technology to the Baltic Sea to demonstrate the vehicle's effectiveness in operational scenarios. Like, this was all unfolding this summer in the exact spot. And I think the larger point about this Navy piece is that NATO has full control of that section of the ocean.
Right.
Full control. And submarines and all of the large warships that are in that area.
I mean, so you would think that there would be some kind of, I don't know, you watch the movies, right? And everyone can see something coming, the blip on the radar.
Right.
Like, something's going on here. And
Hunt
so
for Red October.
We live in this world where so much is recorded and monitored that it feels so unlikely that someone doesn't have something incriminating.
Well, and just a few days ago, so that was the summer. And then just 2 days ago, we had the U.S. 6th Fleet left the Baltic Sea, was right there only a few days ago. And on Wednesday morning, the amphibious assault ship, the USS Kearsarge, which we talked about last night on the show, escorted by the landing ships, the USS Arlington, the USS Gunston Hall, was en route towards the west. Previously, the ships were part of U.S. units that took part in NATO maneuvers and called at numerous ports in Germany, Scandinavia, and Baltic states. Off the coast of Denmark is where the pipelines were hit. Just days ago, the USS Kearsarge was at that area. Coincidence? In an area that's completely controlled by NATO, that's where these four explosions. But this, I mean, it's amazing to watch the Western media over the past 24 hours trying to pin the blame on Russia. Like CNN did a whole thing last night with, they had like John Brennan on, former CIA head, who was spinning. He's like, yeah, it's clearly Russia.
And also just utterly unconcerned about the ecological fallout. Like,
right.
Oh, that happened. That's too bad. We'll investigate.
Who cares?
It's not like when it happened near our country, so... Whatever.
It's just happened by near Germany. It happens off the coast of Europe, so who really cares? Glenn Greenwald points out that all of this Western media coverage of this is total BS on this topic because for years, as he points out, the U.S. has been trying to sabotage and end this pipeline. Watch.
How many things have been blamed on Russia over the past 5 or 6 years by the Western media, by the EU, by neoliberals and deep state operatives? That turned out to be completely false. They even invented a conspiracy theory. You probably remember that Russia had some super secret hypersonic weapon that was causing brain damage in American diplomats that nobody had ever heard of before. And it turned out to be debunked even by the CIA. Why would Russia explode their own pipeline that gives them enormous amounts of leverage? They can turn off that pipeline at any time that they want, which gives them exactly the power that they most want. I don't know who did this, but what I do know is what you said, that a state could only do this. But also, the U.S. has been obsessed for years, going back to the Bush administration, with trying to bully and coerce and persuade the Europeans not to buy natural gas from Moscow, but to instead buy it from the United States. Donald Trump, while he was being called a Putin asset or blackmailed by the Kremlin, was one of the leaders in badgering the Germans, saying, we pay for your defense. You should be buying natural gas from us. And now suddenly the pipeline blows up in the middle of this war, and we're going to blame Russia for that? The country that has the least interest in doing it.
Yes.
Again,
course.
Though, the media is capitalized on the fact that most people don't really study geopolitics. They only are swallowing the Putin bad, so everything undesirable is related to them.
Right.
That there's no nuance in this, just sort of accept the headlines. Like, oh yeah, that's too bad. He keeps doing bad stuff. Hope the U.S. wins.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Meanwhile, Germans are not falling for it. They're pointing the blame squarely at the United States and NATO. But you still have like NATO apologist media like CNN saying, well, the U.S. and Germany are allies. And then clearly the United States wouldn't do this to one of its allies, Germany.
We'll bug your phones.
Yeah, we'll bug Angela Merkel's phones. And we'll also tell you to go screw yourself, as Victoria Nuland did to EU. Mark Stein, who's been one of the real clear-headed voices, brought up a great point on his show that I hadn't thought of, which is that the United States wouldn't tell them about any of this. They left Britain and Germany and all of its allies high and dry repeatedly without telling them anything. Listen.
Do you know, after Afghanistan, people say, oh, well, this couldn't be the Americans because Denmark and Germany are their NATO allies. Well, when they bugged out of Kabul, they didn't let the British or anybody else know that they were abandoning Bagram Air Base. Those guys just woke up in the morning and found that all the Yanks had left. So if they were doing something like this, it's entirely possible that they wouldn't let the Danes and the Germans in on it.
Yeah. Yes. Great point. Right. We didn't tell them anything. Oh, here you go. Where the Americans go? Where the Americans go? They left us holding the bag. What the hell? They're just gone. They're just gone. Unbelievable. And then they were actually pissed about it. You know, Britain was like, what the hell? Like, I thought we were in this mess together for 20 years. So how will this affect us? I mean, that's the big question, right?
Well, Europeans are now being warned that there could be a disruption of even mobile networks this winter. My theory is that Germany was starting to cave to the pressure of protests and the demands of their citizens to open up this pipeline, and were about to do it. And that's why whatever forces said, oh, no, you better not. I do think that Europe was budgeting some extra affordable energy this winter because they need it, right? And so now Europeans are being told that even cell phone networks could be disrupted.
Why? This is interesting. So why is this?
So the energy crisis in Europe could cause blackouts and disruption to mobile service because telecom companies are saying that the energy shortage will push their networks to the brink. That's because these networks, the cell towers, run on electricity, which necessitates some type of fuel. Well, in France now, they're going to do routine maintenance on their nuclear reactors. So those will go down for a while. France is saying, well, I know we don't have a lot of energy, but we're just going to go and polish these and not use them for a while. That's a bit inexplicable. And then again, the crisis of fuel to power the power plants that we run our lives on.
So let's talk about blackouts, actually, because this is a big piece of this, right, which are far worse than we think. You think, oh, blackouts, like, that's not a big deal. It's like just like a power outage, and it'll, you know, flip the switch, it comes back on, everything's good to go. No, I mean, and I have to admit, I was fairly ignorant on this point until last night when I spent some time watching German television. So I speak German, and I translated this German television report with a blackout expert, Robert Junjisch. I'm not saying his last name correctly. He's a blackout expert. So my German is not top notch. I translated it the best that I could to be as authentic as I could. This was on German TV's independent network, Auf One. Again, with a blackout expert, says this is a catastrophe in the making, and it is going to be absolutely devastating. It will be fatal to the German people when we have these blackouts, which are coming. Watch this.
In the media. Nicht so drastisch gewarnt wird, wie das nötig wäre. Man hat mir zum Beispiel letzte Woche bei einem Interview vorgeworfen, dass ich Panik machen würde und nur Profit hier hätte, weil ich gesagt habe, die Blackout-Wahrscheinlichkeit schätze ich auf 99,9%. Dabei ist es eigentlich Blödsinn, eine Prozentzahl zu sagen für ein Ereignis, was noch nie eingetreten ist, weil Wahrscheinlichkeiten kann ich nur berechnen, wenn ich auch eine gewisse Wiederholzahl habe. Aber ich wollte damit einfach zum Ausdruck bringen, dass es eben sehr, sehr wahrscheinlich ist und wir schon mit einem Bein über dem Abgrund stehen. Denn wenn man das nicht tut, wenn die Leute nicht endlich verstehen, dass wir vor dieser dramatischen, möglicherweise Situation des Blackouts stehen, bereiten sie sich nicht vor, was eben gerade passiert. Und dann wird es für diese Menschen, aber auch für die Unternehmen katastrophale Folgen.
I mean, it's startling. So he's saying it'd be a total system failure. And you cannot just like turn the power grid back on and off. I mean, 30% of electronic devices would be destroyed during a blackout. And it's going to be fatal for people.
Yes. Now in Europe, we're being told that some of these sort of selective blackouts will be in places that don't disrupt emergency services like hospitals and police. But in Africa, they're being told that they can expect power outages that hit ATMs even. That is a terrifying feeling that you couldn't go and get your own money, right?
And gas
filling stations, yeah. That kind of thing. In fact, rolling blackouts have already begun. In South Africa, the power company says that it's keeping lights off to contain emergency generation services, meaning we're just trying to protect the grid, and so we're going to turn things off selectively. In Zimbabwe, they're calling this load curtailment, right? They're just trying to keep what the grid can sustain. And yet, as less power is available, people are paying a premium for what they can get. So you may not get power, but you still will get it up the butt with your energy bill, right?
You're going to get it up the butt. Yeah. And again, we talk about Africa, right? And we need to spend more time talking about Africa. We try to do it on this show, covering stories from Africa. And it's important because we've said all along that who gets affected the most in all of this? It's the poor countries in Africa that get affected the most. So they're already, you know, when you look at Germany, like, nah, that's fantasy. They're not going to have blackouts. It's already happening. It's already happening in countries with infrastructure that is not as strong. They don't, and they're the ones that get the brunt of the damage, right? They bear the brunt of this damage, of course, on food, on energy, on all of it. So when we talk about like, oh, green energy and climate referendums and all this garbage, it's Africa that gets hit the hardest because their entire infrastructure relies on fossil fuels. When you take that away from them, hospitals close, they can't do ultrasounds on women, and they can't do C-sections. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Just if you dive into the data, it's really, really terrifying.
Well, given that this show has run out of Europe, and the newsletter as well. You know, We continue to, in our heads, run down these emergency situations, like, could we eat the eggs from the chicken? Could we grow from the garden? But this part of it, like, you couldn't get your money out of an ATM, or I couldn't call my child who's at school, right? We have a middle schooler. And then how would I find him? Those are the things that give me the most anxiety. I was watching one of the channels I've mentioned a few times, I, Earl Grey, which is a British expat who lives in Russia. And he was saying, you know, I don't feel like this conflict is going to escape anyone. He said, I moved to Russia because I thought the pandemic was a sort of, let's wait it out. This will end. We all will be okay at some point. And he calculated that Russia was the best place for him and his family. And he's like, I'm comfortable with that. But he's like, I don't think this calculation will be available for anyone anywhere on the planet based on this coming conflict. It feels like this is coming to all of our doorsteps. For some people, it will be a lot louder than others. And that really struck me, this idea that, like, it's not a wait and see situation. It is something we all have to collectively just try and live through. We're going to talk about Serbia in a minute and the idea of peace talks that may not be an option, no matter how much we might want it. And we talk about this much on the show, that we all do want peace talks.
We have more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about Serbia in just a moment. We're also going to talk about the climate misinformation around hurricanes and the politicking around that. We're also going to look at homelessness and hunger, a lot to cover on the show. We have a daily newsletter. We encourage you to all subscribe. It's at redacted.inc. That is the place to go. Again, it's free, so it's totally inexpensive. And it can be delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. That is if our electric grid holds up and you can actually read the damn thing, if you read it on your cell phone. But hey, fingers crossed, we're still here. You can read it right now.
We're going to send it to you telepathically when all the world goes out, but we'll be here. All right, let's continue to talk about Serbia, because Serbia continues to get timeouts from the European Union. They are not happy with Serbia's behavior because they refuse to sanction Russia. And they may find themselves with sanctions of their own. The threats from the EU have been veiled. Some of them, though, are not so veiled. One group is saying Serbia should not continue accession talks for EU membership, meaning they need to be spanked and sent to the corner. They should not be allowed to continue their application for membership while they refuse to do what their buddies in the European Union are doing. Now, here is that group, the Socialist and Democrats group. They say the EU cannot continue accession talks with Serbia if they don't align with EU sanctions against Russia. We've talked about many times that why they refuse to do this. This is what we will say in the Parliament's upcoming enlargement report at TP-ICULA or TPICULA. Very disappointing coming from a country aspiring to join the EU. It's like a verbal condescension.
So you need to put on sanctions against Russia because look how well Europe is doing right now. I mean, the United Kingdom is literally slipping into a third world economy right now. You're watching the collapse of the British pound. You're watching children in the UK. We had it in the newsletter this morning, resulting to eating pencil erasers because they're hungry. Literally, children not having enough food in the UK. We're watching German protests. We're watching people in Prague taking to the streets saying enough is enough. Down with NATO, down with the EU. Put our people first. We saw an election in Italy reflecting that. And so what they're saying is, Serbia, if you want to join us, you need to do the same shit that they're doing, which is driving them into the ground.
Now, most voters in Serbia don't necessarily want to align themselves with NATO. They don't feel like this is a priority, although if you are Serbian President Vucic, you realize it's not as easy as putting up a middle finger and saying, no, we don't really care, then we'll just go off on our merry way, because they are so interconnected with Europe in terms of business and citizenships. They have a lot of sort of dual passports. They want to get along. But the EU continues to drag them out and kind of stone them in public for what it thinks is not speaking up the company line. Earlier this week, the US and the EU ramped up pressure on Serbia for signing a collaboration agreement with Russia. In fact, the US ambassador to Serbia said no one should be signing anything with Russia, period. All they really signed was a diplomatic schedule. As in, like, we are going to continue to talk to each other and come up with things that are mutually beneficial. But, you know, Serbia is really doing a dance here. They recently rejected, they said that they will reject the referendum in Ukraine. They will not consider this area annexed and part of Russia. In fact, Serbian President Vucic spoke last week at the United Nations and said, "We are protecting our own territorial integrity. It's in our best interest to do that." Now, he said, but he did say, so it's funny because the Western media is telling you, even though Serbia is a friend of Russia, they do not support the annexation of this territory. At least they're, you know, see, even Russia's friends doesn't support this, right?
Right.
But Vucic continued to say that, you know, all of this politicking is not saving lives. He says that what's going on in all of these like diplomatic talks and grandstanding is impotent and vague. Listen.
Everything we are doing here today seems at least relatively impotent and vague. Our words make hollow and empty echo comparing to the reality we are facing. And that reality is such that no one is listening to anyone here. No one strives towards real agreements and to resolving problems. And almost everyone takes care only of their own interests, breaching often along the way the basic principles of international law.
Now, he goes on to speak about peace talks and the stability of food supplies during war. And he says, I just want to ask this question. I'm curious. When we talk about territorial integrity, right, the Western world does not want any part of Ukraine being sanctioned off or partitioned off to be something else. They care a lot about territorial integrity, but not for Serbia, because Western leaders consider Kosovo independent. So he has this question to say.
We ask for a clear answer to the question I've been asking my interlocutors, leaders of many countries for years. What is the difference between the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine and sovereignty and territorial integrity of Serbia, which was grossly violated and for which you provided international recognition and legitimacy, at least some of you? Nobody has ever provided a rational answer to this question.
Yeah, great question. And I saw, you know, a lot of Serbians were saying, what a great speech. Like literally standing there calling them out for this hypocrisy.
Yeah.
You know?
Because we don't have interests in your region. Right. You know, that's really the only answer. It's money, sort of bargaining chips. It's not there for us at this moment. That's the real answer to why Western powers have a double standard,
right,
for Serbia versus Ukraine. Now, he says he has not forgotten how NATO invaded his country. Listen.
Let me remind you. Serbia has not stepped its foot on someone else's territory, never ever, nor has it endangered territorial integrity of a single sovereign state, so that anyone might intervene or carry out aggression against it, the way it was done against Serbia in 1999. Nevertheless, as I said, it did not prevent 19 richest NATO countries from attacking a sovereign country without a decision by the United Nations Security Council.
Yeah, an illegal attack that killed thousands of people, mm-hmm, innocent people in Serbia, destroyed infrastructure. I mean, you can walk through the streets of Belgrade today, see the infrastructure still damaged, hitting the Chinese embassy, striking the Chinese embassy. Oh, it was a mistake. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a different, we're sorry about that. We're sorry.
Yes, but even so, he is calling for peace talks. He says he has a beautiful line about peace talks, and I'm going to let him say it rather than paraphrase.
It is better to negotiate for 100 years than to wage war for a single day. I hope that we will reach mutually acceptable solution based on compromise, because this is the absolutely only way for reaching our goal.
It is better to have peace talks for 100 years than a single day of war. I don't think we are going to get that choice.
No.
Western leaders do not seem to have the appetite for this. And Russia last week said in President Putin's address, we have continued to ask for peace talks. So with whatever power we have as just ordinary citizens, we should be demanding our leaders show up for that.
Let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. Again, I'll be hanging out after the show, after the live show tonight for about an hour in the comments. So please, we can have a conversation there as well after the live show goes off. I should remind you, some people join us a little bit later and they say, why is there a 30-minute intro to your show? Well, we do a live show and that 30-minute intro is so that YouTube alerts and Rumble alerts can go out to people. And you can always, if you're watching the replay, you can always just fast forward through that 30-minute intro a little bit later.
Or if you come early, just take that time and fill up your water bottle. And,
yeah, kick back, get a coffee, get your hair done, relax a little bit.
Get your hair done.
Pet your dog.
And then, we oftentimes have like 3,000 to 5,000 people in there, like even before that 30-minute countdown starts, and they're just chatting away. So join that chat.
Yeah.
They have fun. Yeah.
People are like, people are like, I love the intro. So anyway, just wanted to mention that. That's the only reason we do it is because we have to wait on those alerts and it allows everyone to join up and gather up together. But we're live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So, all right, let's talk about what's going on in Florida, what's going on in the Caribbean and Cuba. This was the scene overnight in Florida as Hurricane Ian destroyed the power grid, knocking out power to 2 million people. Watch this.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Anyone who's lived through a hurricane, when I lived in Florida, I lived through 3 of them. They crisscrossed right where I lived in Orlando and was without power on each of those occasions for 2 weeks at a time with trees coming through the house and total destruction. This was awful. This was absolutely awful. So 2 million people without power, people fleeing the state. Cuba at this hour still has no power in large parts of the country. We have obviously the Caribbean was ravaged as a result of it. There's still going to be rainfall. Again, the problem is in Florida is that the saturation, right? So there's nowhere for the water to go. It just sits because the sand doesn't absorb it. You don't have places for it to go. You have a lot of standing water. And so when people try to drive through this stuff, that's when people get killed. They drive through electric lines that are in the ground. Police usually keep the areas marked off and cordoned off so you can't drive through it. But again, most people die not during the hurricane, but after, when they go out and try to get water, they try to get food, they try to drive somewhere, and they end up driving through electrical lines on the streets and driving through sinkholes that they didn't see because it was underneath water. Really, really awful. People drowning in their homes. Whenever you have a massive hurricane like this, you get a whole lot of fake news surrounding climate change. And liberal media, I swear to God, did not disappoint yesterday. Don Lemon, just one example, who has no ratings on CNN. More people watched our show last night than his show. He was trying to make the head scientist at NOAA, which is the
National Oceanic
Atmospheric Administration. My brother-in-law works for NOAA, and I should know it. I should know it. I should know it. And he's a captain of a ship, actually. So anyway, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, the head scientist who knows all about this, Don Lemon kept trying to push him to talk about climate change, and he's there to talk about this event. And he keeps pushing him on this, and he keeps saying, like, these hurricanes are intensifying, and, this is not normal. This is not normal. Watch.
Can you tell us what this is and what effect the climate change has on this phenomenon?
Well, we can come back and talk about climate change at a later time. I want to focus on the here and now.
Listen, I'm just trying to get that. You said you want to talk about climate change, but what effect does climate change have on this phenomenon that is happening now? Because it seems these storms are intensifying. That's the question
here. I don't think you can link climate change to any one event.
Okay. Well, listen, I grew up there, and these storms are intensifying. Something is causing them to intensify.
That guy's a puff.
I grew up there and these hurricanes are intensifying. Well, actually, no, that's not true. In fact, since the 1960s, we've had half of the number of hurricanes. The data doesn't lie. Hurricanes are actually becoming less frequent and less intense, according to the research.
So, right. So, okay, I'm not going to continue to read out the initialism of NOAA. I'm just going to say, no, actually, it's an acronym. I'm going to just call it NOAA from here on out.
Okay, good.
Okay. So NOAA, in fact, has said that they cannot conclude that greenhouse gas warming has caused more tropical storms. Here is just a snippet from a recent research. Clayton is going to hate this screen, but he says historical tropical storm count does not prove compelling evidence for greenhouse warming induced long-term increase. So the data doesn't show that. Another peer-reviewed study in a journal called Nature Climate Change shows that there are actually declining trends in tropical cyclone frequency. Take a look at this. Now, further, the number of climate-related deaths has gone down. This is according to Belgian researchers who track deaths for global catastrophe. And if you look early in the 1900s, people died with a lot more frequency because they didn't have the infrastructure to protect themselves the way we do now, right? But that is not what the media tells you. Now, we do not want to pretend that people are not suffering. Absolutely, they are.
But it has nothing to do with climate change. It was a hurricane and they're right. suffering.
We're talking about whether or not we should politicize this and accept culpability for being parasitic on the earth, right? This is happening because we all buy things that are made of plastic and drive cars, and really it's our own fault and we're suffering for it. It's very, I don't know, that's almost like church speak, you know, like you must repent type thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and as Alex Epstein writes about in Fossil Future, which is an amazing book, I encourage you all to read it. And he talks about fossil fuels are the future. He says that the deaths have declined dramatically. I mean, overwhelmingly, and climate related problems have dramatically dropped since the 1900s because of our adaptability. Right. The reason people don't die mostly from heat related incidents anymore, very few compared to how many people die from cold related incidents, is because we have air conditioning. We have fossil fuels that have managed to create buildings and protect us from hurricanes and natural disasters and other things. So this idea that they're intensifying and getting worse and more people are dying is just not true.
Well, I really subscribe to the whole humans are parasites type rhetoric, and
you
it
subscribe
must
or subscribe.
I did subscribe to it for a long time because of the media screaming about it and sort of my own need to protect my own kids. And I remember I had this sort of I had this idea that all plastics were bad and that we were just sort of powerless to resist the urge to use plastics. And then our daughter was hospitalized for 4 days, and almost everything they used to save her life was made of plastic. And I was like, where do I get off feeling like this when actually there is a need to manufacture things that help save lives?
Right. And so as Alex Epstein points out in his book, yes, everything that we do has an impact, right? So when you want to talk about, you want to talk about building an apartment complex, or you want to talk about building a new Target, or all of those things have an effect. What can we do to learn about our effects? How can we maybe mitigate some of that? If you're going to build a dam, it's going to have, there's huge benefits to it, but yes, there are going to be side effects. In the same way that when you then suddenly eliminate fossil fuels from your ability, you know, your war chest to be able to use to power your society, people are going to die. People are going to go into famine. They're not going to have food. Hospitals will be shut down. Just look at Africa. You take away fossil fuels from these people and you tell them to start using solar, and you are going to have widespread chaos, which is already what's happening. You want to push people towards solar? Great. Think about all the mining problems with solar and getting all of the rare earth minerals from solar and wind turbines. So everything has a cause and effect. Right? Even nuclear, which is the cleanest and no one has ever died. Look at the data. No one has ever died as a result of an accident because of a nuclear reactor death. It's never happened. It's the cleanest. The byproducts are the cleanest. So then you have the radiation output. Well, how do you mitigate that? What do you do with that? Right? So
there are real solutions. We don't discuss it because we let the media scare us and scream at us about how it's really all our fault. And we need to live with less, which is such a crazy thing to tell people. Live with less, consume less. It's all there. It's in Target. Just don't buy it, right? And then everything will change, really, when really there are real solutions that will, in fact, take power and money out of the people who are in charge right now. They don't really want to talk about those things.
Well, Democrats didn't miss a beat yesterday, pushing for fundraising opportunities around this, saying that, hey, if you elect Democrats, hurricanes won't happen anymore, or they'll be mitigated because Democrats will be in power. We'll stop this. This was here's failed presidential candidate Amy Klobuchar on MSNBC's Morning Joe. Watch this.
We just did something about climate change for the first time in decades. That's why we've got to win this as that hurricane bears down on Florida. We got to win in the midterms.
Yeah, we got to win in the midterms, because if you elect us, then hurricanes won't bear down on Florida. Okay. That's the conclusion you draw from that.
cool.
But it's bigger than all of this.
Wow, I mean, that's very powerful. Sorry, but if you can like through the power of the vote out hurricanes. I mean, who's going to be on the side of hurricanes, honestly?
Right. Vote for Amy Klobuchar and Democrats in the midterm elections. They will end hurricanes. They will end hurricanes. They will end whatever this, in a false narrative around climate change. But it's bigger than all of that. Justin Trudeau in Canada, of course, they're moving towards censorship of speech around climate. Prime Minister of New Zealand, all going to great lengths to change government policies to keep you from questioning these draconian climate laws. Like if you speak out against them, you'll be kicked off social media. You will be in trouble. That's the thing. New Zealand Prime Minister called for censorship so people can't freely discuss issues surrounding climate change. Watch her at the United Nations.
This week we launched an initiative alongside companies and nonprofits to help improve research and understanding of how a person's online experiences are curated by automated processes. This will also be important in understanding more about mis- and disinformation online, a challenge that we must, as leaders, address. I can say with complete certainty that we cannot ignore it. To do so poses an equal threat to the norms we all value. After all, how do you successfully end a war if people are led to believe the reason for its existence is not only legal but noble? How do you tackle climate change if people do not believe it exists? How do you ensure the human rights of others are upheld when they are subjected to hateful and dangerous rhetoric and ideology?
Yeah, how do you do that? She's basically saying, how should we manipulate people if we can't make them agree on what we want, right? Like, mm-hmm. Here's what we want, but you've got to understand and you can't talk about it. We got to make you understand and we have to manipulate you into understanding what we want. That's basically what she's calling for. Mm-hmm. This is what Glenn Greenwald said in response to this speech. This is the face of authoritarianism. Even though it looks different than you were taught to expect, and it's the mindset of tyrants everywhere, this is someone so inebriated by her sense of righteousness and superiority that she views dissent as an evil too dangerous to allow. Okay. But the media is using data to show you that weather-related disasters are worse than ever.
Right. And so how do they do that? By two metrics. One, the number of people affected, and two, the number of dollar amount of damage.
Right.
Right.
Billions of dollars in damage in Florida.
And it is true that hurricanes will cost more lives and damage than ever before, but they ignore a phenomenon called expanding the bullseye effect. Now, this is from researcher Bjorn Lundberg, who studies what the media tells us versus what the data tells us. So he's making this case that the bullseye is expanding. So whereas people would have been in a small region in 1950, and so therefore the hurricane that blew through most of that image on the left, that's natural land, wouldn't have harmed people or buildings because they simply weren't there. And then you expand it 2080, 2010, what's projected through 2040. Of course, right? Does this affect more people than ever? Yes. Does it affect more infrastructure than ever? Yes. But because there are more there, we're using a moving target. In fact, he points out that a hurricane in Miami in 1940 would have wrecked 24,000 homes, which is bad, but the same storm this year would wreck over 1 million, and they are much more expensive homes. So he says there are just more people with more stuff in harm's way.
Right. Yeah, we continue to build, and of course, they don't want to stop building. Right. This is the thing, right? Of course, politicians and billionaires and big business don't want to stop building. They don't want to continue to stop building their Best Buys and their Targets and all of that. So that's never part of the conversation.
Right. Ever. It's just that we are there, right? So a storm in the 1800s when this was Everglades and natural resources wouldn't have caused harm to things that we needed to fix. The things that were damaged would have composted and become new forest, right? And so, in fact, researchers have predicted the scale of damage based on size of storm and the population that we have now, and have concluded that the worst of these storms would have been the ones that hit 100 years ago. If you take a look here, if we had not that graphic. Yes, that one. If we had had the infrastructure in place and the people living in the regions now, the worst of these would have come around 1930, 1920s area. So why are politicians trying to make us think that it's so bad now it's worse than ever? Like Don Lemon says, just because he grew up there, he knows. Because they want us to give up our comforts, give up our homes, right?
Right. Yeah.
So either, I don't know, we kill off more people.
Well, that's part of the plan.
Right? And infrastructure, or we figure ourselves a way to make all the people that we have gone ahead and birthed, make them safer.
No, the World Economic Forum wants fewer people. They want reduction of farms and your ownership of land. We've already seen that in action. And they want mega cities. That's what they want. And they want to continue buying up coastal cities and areas. I mean, that's
and
exactly
you will happily move there if you believe this narrative. Again, a lot of this research comes from the great book, False Alarm, by researcher Bjorn Lundberg, who has been on this show. And we encourage you to. Now, we are not climate change deniers. Neither is he. He believes that the net effect of global warming will be negative overall, but it is not at all what the media tells you.
And as Alex Epstein talks about, manageable. Like the history of it is manageable. Like if we have a 1 degree increase, okay, well then humans are dynamic and the ability to adapt. And so again, this is part of the problem, is that we are told that with these changes that it's total destruction. And if we don't, and if certainly if we cut off fossil fuels and all of those other abilities to combat it, then it would be destructive. So when you take away our ability to fight it with machinery and other things that are going to use fossil fuels, that's a destruction waiting to happen. Dan Pena is one of the richest men on the planet. He owns $50 billion. And he says this entire thing is an absolute scam because the financial institutions would never lend to anyone if this were real. He says the whole thing is a sham, a scam. Watch this amazing speech.
And let's just for a moment say that it is true. That means that the best scenario vis-a-vis global warming is about 10 feet raise in water. That's the best scenario over the next 40, 50 years. That's the best scenario. The worst scenario is about 100 feet. But let's just take the 10 feet. If the water on the planet is going to rise up 10 feet, that means the southern part of the United States is gone. England is gone. Most of Europe is gone. And I can go, most of Central America is gone. Okay. If that's the case, let's just take Florida, for example, which is one of the fastest growing condominium, beachfront condominiums on the planet. In the prospectus, when you invest, there should be, in the footnotes, if global warming is for real, they won't put it that way, global warming happens and water rises 10 feet, this investment you made is fuck all. Not one single investment prospectus written since 2000, this century, has alluded to global warming. Not one motherfucker. If it were really true, the banks wouldn't invest. The banks wouldn't finance. Not one motherfucking condominium. So the people that have the money, and I'm jealous of the Vice President Gore, which Sally and I rode on a plane from South America with a few years ago. I am jealous he came up with a scam before I did. Because the financial institutions, the banks of this world know it's not gonna happen. Otherwise, you couldn't get a goddamn loan in London. You know those 30, 40 year mortgages? The world will be over by then.
Isn't that a great point?
Yes.
I mean, and think about it. He's, you know, you have someone like Bill Gates, who's also a multi-billionaire, and he's on the opposite side of this, right? He's saying, no, this is all a scam. You guys, you're buying up all of these coastal cities. You're building bigger mansions than ever before in areas that apparently in 10 years, Inconvenient Truth Al Gore told us would be completely underwater. Is that the case? Is that true? Probably not. Let us know what you think about this in the comments below. Again,
I mean, look, the world will shift. Certain places will get hotter and we will have to grow our food a little bit higher, right? These things are going to happen as the planet continues to. We are saying this will be hard on us, but we do not just blindly accept because Don Lemon says, I grew up there, so I know.
Yeah. And also that more people die because of cold than heat. So overwhelming.
Which is going to bring about a bigger global catastrophe this winter, which we've continued to talk about.
Yes, yeah. A man-made catastrophe cutting off fossil fuels. Exactly. So again, I'll be hanging out for an hour after the live show in the comments below. We can chat and go back and forth. So get in your comments after the live show here. But we've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about homelessness and being hungry and what the United States is doing to try to tackle homelessness.
All right. We are all now used to the fact that governments tell us when we can and cannot run our businesses. The pandemic trained us for that, right?
They took away our businesses. They shut them down.
They told us to stay home, mm-hmm. right? So was that training for the government to now say that we have to collectively open up our businesses and maybe eventually our homes to tackle the homelessness problem that cities are unable to tackle? So here is a law that is currently going to be on the ballot in Los Angeles in 2024 that says that hotels should be forced to give vacant rooms to homeless people. You know, as you know, Southern California, in fact, all of California's homeless problem is worse than ever, and it is increasing. So what is to be done about it? This new idea comes from city officials. They say that hotel owners in Los Angeles have to call up the housing division every afternoon and tell them how many vacancies they have in their hotels. And then the housing department would have the right to reserve those rooms at a fair market rate for the homeless. That fair market rate has not really been discussed. They say that hotels cannot discriminate. It's just whoever we're going to put there, we're going to put there. And you have no right. Now, currently, hotels do have the right to refuse customers paying customers.
Right.
But if the city is the paying customer, they would not have the right.
So on the ballot, this would be a law. You'd have to call up at a certain time every day. Think about what kind of infrastructure are they going to be able to handle this?
Right.
If
you think of, if I show up super drunk and high at a hotel, they have the right to say, no, ma'am, you can't stay here. Right.
This is our land. We don't want you. You're going to go up in the room and you're going to pee all over the place. You're going to smash everything. We don't want you here.
We're not saying that these are behavior of homeless people, but we're saying that they now have the right to refuse service, and that right will be taken from them. Incidentally, we're not supposed to say homeless these days. The acceptable word is now unhoused or okay. unsheltered.
Okay, I'm going to continue to call them homeless.
Yeah, let's just go over a little bit why the media wants us to use the word unhoused. This is from Architectural Digest. They say the change is happening as part of government's move away from punitive measures amid a deepening housing crisis. Past efforts have not resolved the matter, and both policy and messaging are shifting. I guess that's because we're using the wrong word. That's why we haven't been able to solve it, because we were just using the wrong word. It says the word homeless has become inseparable from a toxic narrative that blames and demonizes people who are unhoused. So I guess if we shift the word, you'll think better.
This is the Democrats' policy on so many different levels. Just change the words and we'll solve everything.
Right?
Just, you can't call someone this anymore, and then that will literally end, that will end violence.
Right, and so this spokesperson from the ACLU in Southern California says, the term is increasingly used in a way where it implies someone is dangerous or devious, and so the less charged term is more apt. We've seen this before, she says, with the words like transient. I don't know why that's scary. Or hobo, obviously that's not a nice word. Homeless has become intertwined with narratives that are toxic, and it deserves to be retired. So
why is hobo not a nice word? I think hobo seems like it's actually kind of nice. It's like, it reminds me of like 1920s guy with a bag and a stick, you know, stick and a bag on the end of it, like he's hopping trains.
I think maybe during the 80s,
hobo was born out of the Great Depression, right?
Yeah, hobo. Hobo is very specifically a train hopper. It was a term that they used themselves. It was like
a hobo.
I don't know.
I hop trains. Yeah.
Oh.
So okay. I don't know why it's, I mean, I think we always think like, oh, because it's antiquated, now it's, we can't say it, right? It's like, oh, it's 50 years old. Yeah, we can't say it. We need to be a little bit more sensitive to people that hop trains with a stick and a bag. Okay.
Like, what? Okay. How many people are there that object to do it to that word?
By the way, I've never understood the idea of the stick in the bag. Like, you always saw it in a Bugs Bunny cartoon, you know, was actually using a stick and then had a bag tied around the end of it? Like,
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Did you know the term hipster actually does have a negative connotation. It came from the opioid in the opioid crisis in China, where people would smoke opioids and lay on their hips and be so out of it that they couldn't get up and handle normal life. And so hipster is a negative term, but we're allowed to use that because it relates to fashion.
Like if you're in Brooklyn and you have a hipster beard and you go to a hipster restaurant or a hipster bar, now it's cool.
Yeah, hipsters literally were drug addicts.
Go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say, like, at what point did those hipsters in the 1800s start listening to music you've never heard of?
And wearing really expensive jeans that look like you're not trying, but you're trying.
They listened to indie radio out of Philadelphia, and they were really hip on listening to Pavement records, and they were like, wow, I'm listening to this stuff.
I don't know. I have no problem with semantical shifts, you know, that sort of help people, but it's policy that will help people, not us using a new word.
Yes.
And so, you know, are we helping the unhoused by going to war with China and Russia? Did we help them by shutting down schools so their children had to suffer during the pandemic? Do we help them by moving them around instead of really finding housing? So this is the idea, right? In San Francisco, the homeless are now suing the city for failing to provide affordable housing and then sweeping up what belongings they've got and pretending that they don't exist. Here's from a Reuters article. It says, now this advocacy group has said the city's decades-long failure to adequately invest in affordable housing and shelter has made many thousands of its residents unhoused, forcing them to use tenants and vehicles as shelter. Now, it's true. There was a lot of homeless area down in the Pac Bell Park area, where the Giants play. And boy, we got rid of those for the new Giants stadium. We didn't need them there. And that, you know, they warned us at the time, removing these homeless shelters is going to have a negative effect on the city. But we didn't care because we wanted a nice new place for the Giants to play.
Yeah, you need baseball.
Right. So
they don't need housing.
Off with you. The advocacy group accused San Francisco's Mayor London Breed, police, and other authorities of acting to criminalize homelessness through an array of brutal policing practices that violate the constitutional rights of the unhoused San Franciscans. They said the city has also embarked on a campaign to seize and destroy the property of unhoused people with the express purpose of removing visible signs of homelessness from San Francisco streets. So it looks terrible, right? And so they're like, let's just sweep this up, get rid of it. San Francisco has, according to their website, 8,000 homeless people. And the plaintiffs of this case say that 57% of them are unsheltered. So then should we put this onus on private business owners? If you are a hotel, is the solution on you because of the things that you manage have a bathroom and a bed?
No, because of your failed policies. Because you as a government failed, you shut down power. You had the ability to provide additional power to your people in your state, right? We know that there were supposed to be 6 reactors at the Diablo power plant. There are only 2. We have to have rolling blackouts because of that's just one example. All of your failed government policies have led to this mess. And so now, because you're a failure, and by the way, you have a surplus. Gavin Newsom kept telling us what a surplus we have, all of this additional funding that we have. We're going to use it for climate and renewable energy initiatives in the state of California. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to hand out stimulus checks to people. Okay, here's an idea. Maybe you have affordable housing. Maybe you provide a shelter for people. You don't close down homeless shelters. And even beyond that, that's just really a symptom too, right? Like these people are homeless for a reason.
Right.
They have drug problems for a reason. So you're just Band-Aid solutioning them when you shove them into different locales. Fix the problem up front. Like, what is causing these people to not have homes?
Right.
What
and
is
I
causing
admit,
these people to be drugged out on heroin?
There's something, there's humanity in a proposal like this, right? When you think about children who have no bed and no pillow, no warm place to sleep. But in this way, like, I think we should all presume that city officials who propose this, they have guest bedrooms.
Yeah.
And so if they're going to say private locations, like a privately run business, have to open up because there are beds and bathrooms there, then they should open their house too.
Yeah, the mayor, I'm sure the mayor's house probably has extra room. Open the mayor's house. So every night he has to call and tell them that there's available housing and random homeless people
and
can sleep in the mayor's house.
And what I'm concerned about is the slippery slope of taking individual property like a business and saying this now has to be used for city needs right? And so how far could this go? Could it be a warm-up for people saying, for the city officials to say, well, we're using all the hotels we've got, it's not enough, so now we're going to start using your house too. The proposal was born out of a pandemic program called Project Room Key, which was a FEMA program that paid hotel owners for their vacant rooms, which they had lots of because no one was traveling. But this was voluntary. Hotels had the option to participate, and the new proposal is not. All hotels would have to participate.
So it couldn't just be the Beverly Hilton that gets out of it. And the, I don't know, the Motel 6 has to take,
no,
everyone
it's,
has
it's
to.
All right. You know, Project Room Key cost Los Angeles more than $220 million. They're not saying how they would pay for this new programs. They're just saying various funding streams. Mm-hmm. But as recently as this week, reporting has shown that Los Angeles is not good with any funding streams for the homeless. Take a look at this report.
It turns out Los Angeles agencies failed to spend nearly $150 million in federal homeless grants, and that money has now been lost, according to a report in the LA Times. Oh, that report says the three main housing agencies tasked with reducing homelessness in the LA area never spent the money available to them between 2015 and 2020, so it has since been returned to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Perfect.
The LA Homeless Services Authority blamed the problem on what they call HUD's rigid and complex funding system. The County Housing Authority cited several factors, including insufficient workable housing units and client referrals. The City Housing Authority told the Times many landlords are unwilling to rent to homeless people.
Jeez. Now, as a Californian, I find these images really hard to understand. Just how real is that? Are these just the worst of it that I'm seeing, or is it really in every neighborhood? We had lunch with one of my closest friends who still lives in Los Angeles, and she said, yeah, this is real. What you see is absolutely real.
Yeah, you drive all over. She said, even like Beverly Hills, if you drive through Beverly Hills, which was by, Beverly Hills 90210, right? The richest area. Mm-hmm. Even there, you have these issues. All over the place, you have these issues. Under overpasses and bridges and parks, it's now homeless encampments all over the place. And Philip, you were saying even you're up in Washington State, yeah. Right? Yeah, I mean, it's drive
yeah,
down.
Yeah, I'm in the Portland metro area, and Portland metro looks exactly like that. Like every overpass, there are parts downtown where an entire block is just nothing but like tents pitched on the sidewalk, and you can't even walk down the sidewalk. I mean, it is out of control here, and we're a much smaller city.
Now, I'm not asking you to feel any, feel sorry for, let's say, the Regis Beverly Wilshire. Bev, uh-huh. Will. Do you know what that's from?
No, I don't.
Pretty Woman. Anyway, or like Disneyland Hotel, right? I'm thinking of the smaller business owners that already were struggling during the pandemic, and now they have to have the personnel to be reporting their vacancies to the city and the extra cleaning staff to clean these rooms, turn them over, and not at fair, and not at for any profit, just a fair market rate. So obviously this is a super problematic proposal. But it's just so crazy that politicians are willing to propose it and put it on other people. This has to do with eminent domain, right? You're taking someone else's property and saying, this will now be used for government use, and we have to compensate you. But will they really be compensated? Will they be able to? It's just so many questions, and such a disturbing time that we live in.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts on this disturbing story. We really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you again. We had a time constraint tonight for Super Chats, so thank you for your kind Super Chats and your kind words. I'm going to be hanging out right now after the live show, just to kind of hang out in the comments section, so please jump in. I will be responding. Let's have a conversation about the stories that we were talking about on today's show. We can talk about Ukraine. We can talk about the pipeline. We can talk about homelessness, climate change, anything you want. We'll talk about that in the live show, in the comments section. So please subscribe, and please don't forget to subscribe to our daily newsletter. If you go to redacted.inc and sign up, it's not .com, it's .inc, and sign up for our newsletter. It'll be delivered to your inbox tomorrow morning, 5 days a week, and you can read it over about 5-10 minutes over your cup of coffee, and again, totally, totally free. And we are working on the new Redacted store, so all of our rebels can get some new shirts and mugs and things. People have been asking for that, and I want a hoodie for the fall. So we're working on that as well. So that's coming soon to a storefront near you here on Redacted.
Thank you for joining us today. We will see you next Monday. We will have content over the weekend, so make sure you like and subscribe anything that you find that comes from your team here at Redacted. Thanks for joining us live this week. We'll see you on Monday if we have power.
Bye, everyone.